It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station and live here from Chick-fil-A in Moorhead City. Wes Collins joins us this morning. Good morning, Wes.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us here.
Good to be here. This is my first remote show that we've done, so if I mess anything up, let me know. It's a little different than being in the studio.
Yeah, it certainly is. I know. But you have a live audience, and people already stop by to say hello.
That's right.
And listen to you.
I saw a couple friends standing in line at Chick-fil-A. Yep. I got my coffee here, too.
That was
nice.
There you go. That's it. Yeah. Now let's talk a bit about we've had some subjects lately talking about fiduciaries.
Right. You know, we talked over the past couple of weeks about the importance of, you know, selecting the right fiduciary, and when we use that big legal term, basically what we're referring to and what we talked about on the show would be, let's say in the context of your will, that
right.
would be your executor. That would be the person as far as an executor goes. That will, you know, handle the administration of your estate, make sure your wishes are followed, debts are paid, those kind of things upon your death. So obviously that's a very important role. Primarily talked about, you know, we look to family first, and then sometimes we'll extend out to maybe friends or maybe even someone you have a professional relationship with.
Right.
Also in the will, you could have a testamentary trust, which is like a trust within the will that may be funded at death. Let's say if you had a disabled child, or maybe you had just a minor that you were leaving part of your estate to in trust. You need to think about, obviously, who the best person is to oversee those funds, those trust assets for that child. So that's an important role, you know, as well.
Yeah, and that trustee may be different, right, than the executor.
Sure, maybe an entirely different person. You may want to, you know, set up some checks and balances there where the executor is handling the estate, then you have someone else actually serving as trustee for that let's say, minor beneficiary.
Sure, because you also may have a trustee that's a more specialist in that field.
Right. You know, you could have, and we're talking about trust, you know, I mentioned testamentary trust because we were referring to the will and the fiduciaries in the will.
Right.
But you could certainly have, you know, other types of trust that would be outside of the will, which would be basically referred to as an inter vivos trust, like a living trust. And when we're talking about maybe disabled children or even a disabled adult, we've talked a lot on the program in the past about special needs trust, supplemental needs trust, which are designed for the assets to pass into for the benefit of this person who may be receiving benefits like SSI
right.
or other benefits, so as to not upset their benefits they're receiving, but to give them independence and, you know, assets to be able to access through their trustee.
And that helps, again, when you have that set up, then, like you said, checks and balances.
Right.
You have some another set of eyes.
Right.
And accountability.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. Because a fiduciary, you know, has a very very important job, and they're usually, you know, dealing with assets, and in many cases there's not much oversight as it relates to their dealing with, you know, whatever those assets might be. So sometimes you may want to have, depending on the circumstances, you know, a co-fiduciary, like a co-executor, so that we have two who are involved, co-trustee, so we have two that are involved. So basically, we have two sets of eyes on whatever's going on as it relates to the fiduciary obligations and duties.
But when you do that, do you spell out what their duties are so that they're not overlapping? They're not both spending the money.
Well, normally when you have co-fiduciaries, Ben, both of them will have the same duties. It's just that either they have to act together to do anything, which sometimes is a hindrance,
yes, right.
depending on the circumstances, or they may act jointly and or severally, which basically sets up a situation where either one may write the checks
right.
or
right.
Make the investment decisions, those kind of things, or they can act together. But it does automatically kind of, if you have a co-trustee or co-fiduciary, it sets up a situation where the co automatically has immediate right to see what activity the other has done.
Okay.
You know, so
right.
it creates some transparency.
Well, let's talk about what happens when things go wrong. You have some, you have a fiduciary either is not acting correctly or they may just not know enough. Things don't happen the way they should.
Well, that is probably two of the categories there, you know, maybe kind of self-dealing, helping yourself out, you know, benefiting yourself to an extent that's unreasonable and not consistent with the law or the document itself, or, you know, just not doing a very good job, maybe kind of being asleep at the wheel, you know, that kind of situation. And, you know, if we have that type of situation and we're aware of it or we think that's going on, you know, the first thing to do is to make inquiry, of course, about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get some information about how the assets have been used, how they've been spent. And really, the proof is in the pudding, and normally what we're asking for, bank records, as it relates to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're talking about a trust, for example, and this trustee, or an estate, you know, it could be either one, there's going to be a trust account or an estate account. Or if we're talking about a power of attorney, an attorney, in fact, under a power of attorney, you know, there's going to be the principal's bank account. So obviously, you know, we can access those records by first requesting them to see basically what trust activity or fiduciary activity has taken place during the relevant time period.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the big question marks comes up when you request those documents, and it's a reasonable request. Let's say we're not asking for 10 years of documents. We're just asking for the last year.
Right. Pretty easy
to get.
Yeah.
And we'll even pay for it.
Yeah.
A big question mark comes up when the response is, I'm not giving you anything.
Hmm.
Well, you know, then if you're in that position where nothing is being provided, then, you know, that does start raising questions about, well, if you won't provide it, then what are you trying to hide?
Right.
So in most cases, when there is a, you know, reasonable request for documents, and we're, let's say, representing the fiduciary, you know, we're going to tell them to produce those, be transparent, show what you've done.
Yeah.
And in the event there's something that's questionable, you know, tell your lawyer about it and let's deal with it.
Fix it.
That's right. That's right.
So, but on that idea of reasonableness, who can request documents?
That's a great question. First of all, as I mentioned a moment ago, certainly if we have a single fiduciary, that's one thing. But if we have co-fiduciaries, obviously the other fiduciary can request those.
Right.
We look to the document then to see if there is an accounting requirement in the document. Do you have to file an accounting
with the court?
With the court. Do you have to provide one upon request? Do you have to provide an annual accounting? Who do you provide it to? Those kind of things. And in many good, let's say, powers of attorney or trust, there's language that actually requires an accounting.
Mm-hmm.
In North Carolina, this is not consistent with every state, but in North Carolina, a beneficiary has the right to request an accounting from the trustee.
Right.
So really parties that have standing, who have an interest in what's going on with the trust, would have that right. Now, if you're in a situation where you had, let's say, a special needs trust, and you had a single trustee, and you had a beneficiary who had some capacity problems, maybe didn't have the ability to even know that he or she should be asking for this.
Right.
Well, it could be that we would have to go the extra step of having a guardian appointed for that beneficiary and for that guardian to then request those documents.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about if somebody is just simply cut out? I mean, they feel like they should have been a beneficiary. Do they have any standing?
Well, do they have standing to ask for the documents and to ask for the trust activity or power of attorney activity or estate activity? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
They probably would not have that standing unless they were operating for someone else. But then we kind of pour over into the issue of why was this person left out? You know, we get into our conversations we've had about will caveats and
and
undue influence and lack of capacity and those kind of things dealing with documents that were being executed. But that's a whole different argument.
Yeah. Now, but then, well, if somebody was cut out and their remedy then is to file a suit and try to help you get some of the things in discovery, I guess, right?
That's correct. And that's where we would go next. I mean, let's say we're in a position where we've requested the documents, requested bank records, requested trust activity, for example, have not gotten that, then we would have to file a civil suit in order to require an accounting and production.
All right, we'll get to that in just a moment. We'll take a break and come back with more with Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins. And again, we're live at Chick-fil-A in Moorhead City and our Drive for Hope. If you would like to bring by some items for the Hope Mission Soup Kitchen for their kitchen, help to restock their kitchen or help out with their shelter, you can exchange those donations for a chicken sandwich here at Chick-fil-A in Moorhead City. We'll have more to come in a moment. And welcome back with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. If you have a question, Mandy, what numbers do they call?
You can call 800-818-2255 or use one of our local numbers, 247-7282 and 353-4674.
And Wes Collins with us from Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. And Wes, we're talking about fiduciary responsibilities and what happens when that breaks down, when that goes bad.
Right. We were at the point where we were talking about who can get the, let's say, bank records, trust mm-hmm. records, documentation as it relates to the activity of the fiduciaries to see if they've behaved badly or not. Mm-hmm. And we were up to the point where we requested the documents, but that's been denied. So we're having to involve the courts at this point in time.
Now, if some of these accountings have to be made to the court, are those public records?
Right. Normally, when the court orders production of accountings, bank records, for example, those will be required to be produced to the party requesting them and not necessarily to be filed with the court. Because if it's filed with the court, unless there's a court order indicating that they're under seal, then they're public mm-hmm. record, and there's no need to make them public record normally. Mm-hmm. So we look at the governing documents as it relates to our motion in civil court to require production of the documents. We also look to the North Carolina general statutes if we're, you know, obviously a North Carolina case. So, and what's interesting about that is you don't always have the right when you go into court, you know, to get your attorney's fees.
Right.
And that's
exactly.
kind of a big deal because it's not cheap to go into court. It takes mm-hmm. a lot of time, takes a lot of effort. Your attorney has to have everything right. You have to notice everything up.
A lot of hours.
It's got to be perfect, you know. Otherwise, opposing counsel will jump all over mm-hmm. your mistakes. That's just the way it goes. So, however, if we're in a situation where we have a fiduciary who's not producing documents, accountings, for example, that are required to be produced, many of our statutes, for example, our trust statutes under the body of statutes under 36C, which deals with trust primarily, allows for recovery of your attorney's fees for going into court to require that accounting, to require that production.
Right.
So our General Assembly recognizes there that we, you know, a party such as a beneficiary who's reasonably just asking for documents and being denied,
mm-hmm.
they ought to have that absolute right to get those documents if that's all you're asking for.
If it's a party with standing.
If it's a party that has standing to do it. And it shouldn't cost you anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that is, you know, obviously the statute helps create transparency and hopefully resolves any disputes before they ever get to court.
Right.
You know, and it encourages the production before we ever get to court.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to take a look at that as the attorney filing that motion and requiring that and anticipate that you will be, you know, filing an affidavit for your attorney's fees and costs to be paid for your client mm-hmm. at a later date after the hearing. So, you know, that's the process that we go through, you know, in order to get those documents. Now, if we get them and we find some real problems,
mm-hmm.
Then obviously this lawsuit might spin off into something more than an action for accounting.
Right.
It could be a breach of fiduciary duty lawsuit. It could be a conversion lawsuit where there were assets of someone else converted to your own use. It could take, you know, the face of many different claims. But it's interesting, Ben, in the law that if you're talking about a breach of fiduciary duty claim mm-hmm. and take into consideration that you have a breach of fiduciary duty claim against someone, obviously it's kind of axiomatic, you have to have a fiduciary.
Yes, right, right.
So you got a power of attorney there, or you got a trust, or you got an executor, you got someone who is operating in a fiduciary relationship.
Yes.
And it could even be a business relationship. Let's say that we've got some cases in North Carolina that say that you don't have to have necessarily a document, but you can have a just a position of trust mm-hmm. because you were the maybe business partner who was maybe even in the family. Maybe you're operating for the elderly mother or father, maybe you're right. not even through a power of attorney. And that could create a fiduciary relationship. But why is that so important, whether there's a fiduciary relationship or not? Mm-hmm. It's important because it entirely shifts the burden.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally, and I know this is a little bit complicated, just trying to keep it simple here, but normally the plaintiff who files the lawsuit, let's say it's a car accident mm-hmm. lawsuit, they have the duty to prove that the defendant was negligent, and they have the duty to prove that there was, they have the obligation to prove that there was damages.
Oh, yeah.
So
right,
they've got
right.
to prove their case.
Right.
But if it's a breach of fiduciary duty case, mm-hmm. the plaintiff who's filing the lawsuit doesn't have the burden to prove that there was breach of fiduciary duty. The fiduciary has the duty to prove that there wasn't a yeah. breach of fiduciary duty.
That they were doing things properly.
That's right. So it's a shift of the burden, which is very important.
So, but in essence, you're also saying you become a fiduciary if basically you've been entrusted to spend the money of somebody else.
That's right. And based on the fact that we've gotten these records, we see that you did this with the money, you did that with the money, you overpaid yourself, you paid for your kid's tuition
right.
with the
right.
beneficiary's
you
money,
paid off your credit cards.
You paid your credit cards, you made a mortgage payment, mm-hmm. you know, all these kind of things. And then, you know, when we get to that point, you know, some of these claims also can be what's considered potentially an unfair and deceptive claim, which would get treble damages and attorney's fees. But in most cases, it's going to be your damages, whatever they are, plus interest from the date of the breach. And you might be able to get punitive damages if there was some intentional act to the reckless, you know, disregard of the rights of this beneficiary. So,
all right, we'll
there's
take
some teeth there.
We'll take a short break. We'll come back with some more here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. We're live at Chick-fil-A in Morehead City on Arundel Street right across from Belk, where you can come by and drop off a donation for Hope Mission, for their kitchen, or for their mission, for their shelter. And you can, in exchange, you'll get a free chicken sandwich, a free breakfast sandwich from Chick-fil-A here in Morehead City. We'll have more to come in a moment. And welcome back here live at Chick-fil-A in Morehead City, and with Wes Collins from Harbell and Collins Attorneys at Law. We're talking about fiduciary responsibilities. And last couple of moments here, Wes.
Yeah, well, you know, we've just been walking through the process, and mm-hmm. we're in court now. But, you know, Ben, as we talk about on this program pretty often, we really want to do everything we can to keep from a case from spinning off into court. Because
right.
normally when these breach of fiduciary duty claims or whatever the claims end up being end up in court and both sides lawyer up, then everybody
yeah.
kind of digs in a little bit and it slows down the process. And that usually is not good for, you know, whoever the beneficiary is here or whoever this state is not. Mm-hmm. It's just not normally good for the process because it's so slow. But sometimes you cannot avoid that. Sometimes you have to revert to the courts to get, you know, the remedies that our laws allow us to get. But there are a lot of pitfalls in this, any kind of litigation, but a state-related litigation full of pitfalls, full of the possibility of making mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, so you really have to, as an attorney, it's not an area you dabble in,
mm-hmm.
put it that way. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it for any attorney to dabble in any area. You're either in it or you're not in it.
Yeah.
But it is.
Because even when you get to the courts, there's a lot of things they don't want to hear, right? I mean, they really would rather you've got this figured out before you came.
That's correct. And also, you know, to be frank, even a lot of our Superior Court judges don't see breach of fiduciary duty claims all that much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an area of the law that's somewhat specialized. So you, as the attorney, really need to be up to speed as to all the cases, the current law, current precedent, even to inform the court of mm-hmm. that particular situation. It's not as though just because a Superior Court judge is on the bench
right.
that they know every law and every aspect. That they don't have time to,
you have to bring
study
it to
everything.
Right.
It's your job as the attorney to provide to them the law in good faith. It's your case.
Mm-hmm.
You need to show them, or your client's case, you're just representing your client, but you need to show them, you know, what the law is so that they can follow it. So it's a very interesting area of practice. It's very rewarding, obviously,
right.
when you get the remedy that you want, you know, for your client. But it is somewhat tedious and it's complex.
Well, just for a moment before we get to Thanksgiving, I wish you and Cecil and all the folks at Harvell and Collins a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Thank you. Same to you guys.
And I know that you have a relationship here, too, with Patrick and Laura Keneally.
Yeah.
You've known them for a long time.
Actually, as I was telling you, I spent the very first dollar spent at this store because Pat and Laura called me over and said, Wes, you've been such a good, you know, I guess, friend, you know, they were just moving here. Want you to spend the first dollar. But there were all these people camped out, and I walked to the front of the line. I felt terrible about it.
But we're glad to have you back here in Chick-fil-A.
Right. It's been fun.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. And again, if you want to find out more about taking care of your own legal situation, too, you want to call on folks at Harvell and Collins. The right advice at the right time, you'll find them online at harvellandcollins.com.